Hey, good evening. Welcome to Simple Actions, Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Evan, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Adam.
For those who care to join us, let us open the meeting with a brief silence and the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. All right. So the Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses or opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize that the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in the conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So this evening, we're on the second half of step 12, and I'll read from the paragraphs there, and I've been in a constant state of trying to turn off my ringer this last 10 minutes, so excuse me. All right, let me get to where we're at. So this is meeting 13. We're continuing on 12 on page 96, if anyone is following along. And again, step 12 is having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. We try to carry this message to the alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So then on 96, we start. Suppose now you are making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and he says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. So I'll defer to you.
Go ahead, Donald.
Whoever wants to go first.
I'm Donald Smith, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Donald.
My sobriety date is October 17th, 1994. My home group is the West Ghent Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. We have a book study, and we also have a discussion meeting. And the meeting is open, so all people are welcome to attend. Thank you for inviting me over here tonight. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to say. Can everybody hear me? I was told to speak into this microphone. I don't think I need it. I'm loud enough most of the time. But I'll try to do exactly that. All right. Let's see. The 12th step for me is, I just love this step, because for me it has a remarkable and very true promise in it. It says that having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, period. So if I work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to have a spiritual awakening, which is sufficient to affect my recovery from alcoholism. And I not only believe that, I know that to be a fact. I also know that the beginning of the process for me did not involve working the steps out of the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got sober in 94, and when I came around in Norfolk at that time, there were hardly any big book studies. If they were here, they would read through the chapter, and by the time you finished the chapter, there was 2 minutes of talk at the end of the meeting, you know? And then they would do that, and then they would end up doing the stories, and they would stay in the stories for a long time. Thank you. Almost a year or two, because they just read one story at a time, they talk about it, and that was not the program of recovery, and not many people did the program of recovery as outlined in the book. Although it was around in certain little spots and places, but when I got around, the majority of the time, people didn't do that. So I was sober 5 years before I got into the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And during that time, I had a spiritual experience. I had experience enough to keep me sober. And I had a good sponsor who got me involved in doing service work. So we did a lot of what I'd like to refer to when I look back on it as self-management. You know, doing service is important to do. Helping others is important to do. But if you don't have a real spiritual awakening, it's kind of difficult to sponsor somebody so to help them have one, because you haven't had one yourself. And I think that's why I was not attractive to people, and so nobody ever asked me to sponsor them. I kind of did all this other stuff. And it kept me sober. But at the end of 5 years, I got crazy. My brain started taking off with my body. And I was going through a whole lot of stuff in my head. Now, on the outside, everything looked great and wonderful, but on the inside, it wasn't that way. And I ran into somebody from Portsmouth who was big book sober, and we sat down and went through the book together. And when I finished that process, I was blown away. And so I can't tell you how important it was for me to do that book and do what it says to do in the book. Pray when it says pray, write when it says write, read when it says read. And I always also heard that the answers are not in the book. The questions are in the book. The answers are in you. When you read, when you ask the questions that are in the book to yourself, and you can find out, number one, if you're alcoholic, number two, if you want the solution, number three, how you're gonna get it, number four, how you're gonna keep it. And that's kind of the way it went for me. So having had that spiritual experience, I was able to give people afterwards practical advice on how I worked the steps in order to get sober. Once they asked me, that's fine, but you know, I was evangelical. I wanted to go out and tell everybody, this is how it's done, you know? And so I'm beating the book and telling everybody all this crap, and I wasn't really all that attractive to people at the time. But, you know, I kept thinking, well, it keeps me sober, so what the hell? As it worked out, it worked out really well, because it gave me an opportunity to see how I can be as crazy sober as I was when I was drunk. Just a different kind of crazy, you know? And so time goes on, and I started sponsoring people, and I never ever pushed them to do anything. I always asked them, always had them ask me. And I think that's important, because if they can't ask me, then I don't want to talk to them, really, because they're going to waste my time and theirs. I'm going to tell them they're going to have to do something that the book says to do, and they're not going to want to do it. So I always wait, let them make the decision, and then we start working on them telling me their story. And the practical advice stuff we'll get to in a little bit. But the other part I want to say real quickly, and I'll let Patrick talk, because I, I, I have a tendency to run off at the mouth if everybody doesn't know that already about me. The other thing about the step is that not only does it tell me that I need to carry the message connect to another alcoholic, this particular stuff we're going to talk about tonight also tells me what sober looks like. How am I supposed to function in the real world when I'm sober in Alcoholics Anonymous? So thank you.
Thanks, Donald.
Thank you.
My name's Patrick Lanier. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Patrick.
My sobriety date's May 1st, 2009. And I don't know, working with others is fantastic. There's two schools of thought here. I was taught when I came in that we were going to take these steps rapidly. And then I was supposed to go and try to reproduce this with somebody else. That between God and working with others, that was going to be one of the things that was the glue that held me in this program. What we're reading here says, so suppose now you're making your second visit to a man. Usually for me, my first visit comes, you know, after a meeting, someone comes up to me, or I get to talk to someone after a meeting and keep it light. But, you know, I listen to them. I usually give them, like, you know, about 10 minutes to hear their plight. And it's all the same things. My wife left me. I'm about ready to get thrown out of the Navy. I got to go to court because I got a DUI, all them things. And then, you know, I listen. That's something that's really important to me on that first visit is listening, because, like, when I came around, there wasn't too many people listening to me in my own life. My family wasn't really trying to hear it. My daughter's mom, she wasn't trying to hear it. And so, like, I understand that. And so I listen, and then I give them a little bit of my experience. Usually my second visit comes along in the form of a telephone call. And for me, like, if someone's actually going to call me, that's pretty impressive. Because I didn't do it when I came here until I was really desperate. I made that phone call to somebody. You always hear, like, the 10,000-pound phone or whatever it is, but, like, who wants to call a stranger? Like, I don't know. I was taught as a little kid, stranger danger, you know? Like, I don't know. And I'm not just going to go call someone. Oh, we talked for 10 minutes, and all of a sudden I'm supposed to call you, and you're going to have the solution to save my life. And what happened with me was I had someone give me a call, and it was a real brief phone call. They just asked me how I was doing. I was getting ready to go to work, and they're like, how you doing? I'm good. And I thought it was somebody else. But then fast forward 3 days, I was on my way to AJ Gator's to have a drink because I couldn't do this anymore. And the person that I called back was the person that took their time to call me. We had the first visit, and that person, I wasn't really interested. But he asked me for his phone number, and then he gave me his phone number. And, like, I pretended to put it in my phone. I really didn't. But by the grace of God, I gave him my real phone number, and he called me. And then I called that number back, and he started talking to me. And what he started saying to me was he didn't tell me to read the book, the first one. He's just asking me how it was going. But he started talking to me about what it's like when I'm not drinking, and that's what sold me. And then I asked him to be my sponsor, and he said, well, are you willing to go to any lengths? And my answer to that was, well, I'm calling you, aren't I? And he said, that's good enough. And we met up and we went to a meeting. And then we started reading this book. A lot of things it says, you know, it does say, have him read this volume and say he is prepared to go through with it. If it was left up to me to read this book, I don't know if I'd be sitting here today. I don't know. A lot of times my sponsor would tell me to go read, and then he would ask me the next day, did you read? And I'd say, nope. And he'd say, well, at least you're honest. We can work with that. And I hated this book when I first got here. I really did. I didn't like it at all. And but we read together. We'd sit in coffee houses in Virginia Beach over in Hilltop. We'd sit at Starbucks there. We went through it page by page. And having had the experience yourself, that's exactly what I take out of that. Because I went through the steps, I do have much practical advice to give to somebody else. Let him know that you're available if he wishes to make a decision. And whenever I read decision, I always think of, you know, us in the doctor's opinion, I think it says we make many resolutions, but never a decision. And there was definitely a decision this time. Like, I always have made resolutions to, you know, just pick myself up by the bootstraps, do a little better in life, but it never panned out. But with this time, I was so desperate that I was like, yes, I want to go through with this. And and don't insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. I totally, I don't know. When I called, there was no one else that was talking the way that person was talking to me. And he sold me, so there was no one else for me to call. And it comes back to the way he talked to me about what it's like when I'm not drinking. Everyone's told me my whole life, stop drinking, stop drinking. Judges, my parents, everyone, stop drinking, stop drinking. And like this guy, he said, you have to drink. And I was like, wow, that makes a lot of sense. I do have to drink. And then he got down to what his life's like when he wasn't drinking. And a lot of those things matched up perfectly with my life and things that I could never put to words, the whole irritable, restless, discontent. That's all I got for right now.
All right. Thank you. All right, we're going to continue on page 98, the middle, first full paragraph. It is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. I love one sentence word, paragraph and sentences. Sorry. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of our dependence on God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well, regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. I'll pass on that.
I love this line. The minute we put work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. You know, when I first came around, I had a lot of people giving me rides to meetings and helping me do things and give me, I had no problem doing what the folks in Alcoholics Anonymous told me to do. I was at the end. I had lost everything I owned. I was in my late 30s. I was 39. And so when I knew I could get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and then so there was no fight left in me. If they told me to go stand in the corner on my head, I would have done it because that's what I knew. I knew that people in AA could help me get sober. And I thought it was all about me, obviously. So people would always come and give me a bicycle to ride. I didn't have a car. I didn't have a driver's license, you know. I didn't have enough money for the bus. I was working a minimum wage job. It was horrible. But they helped me out. And what that meant was it was really quite remarkable. And so, but I thought that's what I had to do to help other people was to do those types of things. And, you know, then I heard somebody on a tape say once, they said, you know, you're carrying the alcoholic to the message rather than carrying the message to the alcoholic. And that to me, I went, you know, that makes a hell of a lot of sense. Because I didn't really have much. I didn't know what the hell was going on when it comes to really getting sober, And I just wanted to point out, there's a great line, and I don't do the 12 and 12 very much, but in the tradition, it's in tradition number 8. I wrote it down here. It's on page 169. There's a definition of service work. I hear people all the time tell me they're doing service work when they're sponsoring people. You ever heard anybody say that? I don't get that kind of attitude, but it says in that tradition, it says that service work is there to make 12-step work possible. So the person that set up this meeting is allowing me to do my 12-step work. You all sitting here, even though you don't want to be here and you may know all this stuff, you're actually helping the meeting by doing 12-step work, or just by sitting in a room. But really, you know, working the 12-step is what really I have to do in order to keep me sober on a daily basis. And so I try to remember that at all times. What is it that, am I doing something to help service work? To help my 12-step, help someone else's 12-step, or am I doing my own 12-step? And the other thing is this, I've met a lot of people who, you know, come around and they, and someone told me once, one of my sponsors told me once, they said, you know, people come to Alcoholics Anonymous and they stay in Alcoholics Anonymous until they get what they want and then they leave. Some people get their jobs back, some people get their families back, some people get their, whatever they, it is they're looking to get, they get successful, things happen. Then all of a sudden, they go away because they think they're the ones that did that thing. They got that thing, they got what they wanted, and boom, they're gone away. And so when it says job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking for long. As we place dependence upon people ahead of dependence upon God. So it's, I just changed the one word in there. And the thing is, some people will stay for 5 or 6 years and then they go away because they got what they think they need. They got what a sober life looks like for them. They don't have to come around. So I can say this, you can burn it into their head for the first 3 or 4 years, but all of a sudden, as Bill says in his story, the worldly clamors take over. You know, God was there, and then the worldly clamors show up, and I, next thing I know, I'm flitting off doing something else. And gradually, AA and being sober, AA takes less and less priority. And then as time goes on, so does sobriety, and then finally, I have a drink. Or maybe someplace in the middle there, I become an absolute nut. You know, people don't smoke around me because they're afraid they're going to burn up the place because I'm so dry. I mean, I have never had this problem, but I've seen tons of people have it. You know, when I came here, I was ready to do whatever they told me to do because that's what I had to do it. And I've seen people come and go. They walk in the doors, they get what they want, and they walk out. And then the other thing is this, you know, I just love how Bill does this. The only condition is that he trusts in God and clean house. He says the only one condition, and then there's two things to do. I just love that. But, you know, the problem is always, you know, it's not just keeping your house clean. It's not just cleaning your house, it's keeping the house clean. You know, and I get, you know, and I know in my life, I get kind of, you know, I get afraid sometimes. I don't want to look at this. I don't want to go down this road. I don't want to have to admit to somebody that I have done something or I'm thinking a certain way. And, you know, and the wonderful thing about this is that, you know, I have to, number one, but number two, it's never as big of a deal as I think it is. I always think it's something big, you know? It's like, it's the end of the world, and it's not. And once I say it and talk to somebody about it, it goes away. And it was, and I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, you know, I have to trust the process, and the process is, I think, is a God-given process. And so if I'm trusting the process, I'm trusting God at the same time. And I had tried to tell people that when I sponsor. That was taught to me. See, these things are not things I dreamed up all by myself. You know, as Patrick was talking about, you know, when I went through the steps with somebody and several people, every one of them asked me to communicate to a person that I sponsor the program as it was given to me. And so I picked up things along the way with them, and I try to communicate that to them, but I try to stick to what I know, which is walking through the book on a paragraph by paragraph, page by page. And you know, it's just a remarkable thing. And that's it, thank you.
Thanks, Donald. It's not a matter of giving that is in question. Sure isn't, because, I don't know, for me, like, I just take all the time. So we don't need to worry about me giving too much. That's definitely not going to happen. But when and how to give. And, like, dude, I have not done this program the way it's supposed to be. I've wandered off from working with others and thought I could do things. I remember one time I picked this guy. This guy called me and he was drunk, driving his Jeep Wagoneer, had a ball of vodka, and I thought I could sober him up at IHOP and read the big book to him. And I had to stop by the bank to get money to pay for IHOP, and he smashed his vodka bottle right by the ATM machine. And I'm like, you're gonna pick up every one of those pieces. And he's out in the parking lot of my bank picking up pieces of glass, and he's hammered. I don't have a license, and I think that I'm doing something fantastic here. And there's been a few instances like that. I remember I took a kid that was doing his fifth step with me. I took him to St. Bride's Prison, and it was like 9 o'clock on a Friday night, and we're sitting out in my car in front of St. Bride's, and I'm like, this is where people like me and you end up when we keep. And so I thought this would be the perfect place for him to do his fifth step. And so he starts reading it to me, and this truck pulls up with lights on it, and this guard steps out and asks me what I'm doing. And so then I set forth to try to explain to this guard that I felt like this would be the best place for him to take his fifth step. And he has this look of worry on him, and I'm like, what's up? And he's like, I got a warrant. And then I have to go talk to this guard in the front of St. Bride's. The lieutenant came out, and I try to explain it to him, and he says, all these business matters are handled on Monday, and you're going to have to come back Monday. And I'm like, these are the things that have gone through my mind when I deviate from what this book says. You know, when I think that I know best. And so, you know, it's a matter of how to give. And how am I going to learn? By reading, working with others. That's one thing that was taught to me. If someone asks for your help, then it's probably a good idea to maybe read this chapter before you embark on that journey. And so I try to do that more often now. The minute we put our work on a service plan, I've tried to get a few people jobs that I've worked with, and it's never turned out well. It never has. I tried to get my sponsor a job twice, and he got fired. He finally, the third time, he kept the job, and he's doing good there now, but that didn't make me look too well, you know? And one thing that he talked to me, I remember when I first, you know, I have a daughter that lives in Florida, and her mom lives there. And we were together, me and her met when we were really little kids, and like she taught me a lot about growing up, and like I really needed her. And I remember trying to explain that to my sponsor, and he told me, he said, you know what, this is all I'm gonna say about this matter. He said, you had a chance and you blew it. And that was it. And I'm like, I blew it. And he's like, yeah, isn't that what happened? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, I don't know what's gonna happen in the future, but let's just do this right here. And that was always, you know, I had a job as a bartender, and he didn't seem to have a problem with that when I first met him. He didn't tell me, go get a new job, even though a lot of people in the rooms were telling me that was part of my problem, was my job. And he didn't say that. He said, he made sense. He's like, well, don't you have child support to pay? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, you probably should keep your job then, not just go quit it. And he's like, why don't we just work on this once again? He just kept directing me back to this. You know, I had all kinds of problems. Like I said, baby's mom did not care for me. A lot of family problems. My family was about done with me. I was about ready to go back to prison. I was a bartender. And he told me, he even told me, he's like, I don't have experience with a lot of those problems you have. He said, but I do have experience with this, and I know a lot of people have had those problems, but those things seem to take care of themselves when we work wholeheartedly on this spiritual solution. And so pretty much he burned that idea into my consciousness that I could get well regardless of my situation, regardless of the people, as long as I was willing to, you know, pick up the shovel and do the work in this book. I love how it says burn the idea. Burn that. Burn it right into your head. And I always think of like a brand just going into my brain that I can get well. Doesn't matter my current circumstances, doesn't matter anything. All I gotta do is just have some trust for God, and I mean, and clean house. And I like how Donald's talking about that, because I do not clean house as much as I should. My sponsor's always giving me crap about that, but you know, it was told to me in the beginning, if I want to stay, it's either grow or go, and I have to keep growing. And I know that cleaning house and meditation should be a lot bigger part, but I sometimes slacken up I'm fundamentally lazy. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, we're going to continue on page 98. Now the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparations as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he's lucky enough to have a home. Though his family may be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault-finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover that they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can then be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. I'll pass to Donna.
All right. The first thing that always jumps out at me is, and it's highlighted in my book as well as on this paper, is the word reparations. When I was told that I had to make reparations when I was doing step 9, I balked at that. I said, there's no way in hell I'm doing that. And my sponsors told me, you know, he said, you agreed from the very beginning that you would do what this book said to do. And it says reparation doesn't mean I have to go and make a mumble some kind of an apology. It means I have to actually ask what I can do to make it right and then do what that person says to do to make it right. And, you know, I sat on that for a while. And then it was pointed out to me that if I'm sitting on any amends at all, it means that I still have a step 1 problem. I believe that I am not powerless over alcohol and that I can drink successfully because I'm back to managing my life. I'm back to choosing what it is I will do and what it is I won't do. And when it was put in that light to me, I went and did what I was told to do and what the book said to do, and it completely changed my life. And you know, for me, the fear of actually doing the amends was an actual practical way of trusting God and the process regardless of what the outcome is going to be. And once I put that out of my mind, I got that in my mind that it was the act itself that was important, not just what the outcome was going to be. I was able to do it. And I also discovered that for some reason, the people I was talking to were also granted the gift of forgiveness. The word forgiveness only means to be free of resentment. And if they're pissed off at me, if I go and make reparations and say, I'm sorry, what can I do to make this thing right? They are also granted forgiveness. And so it was great. It's an absolutely great thing. So I'll leave that there. It says, and I just love this, though the family may be at fault in many respects, you know. I was married once when I was 24 years old. I stayed married 6 months maybe, and that was it. I got a little daughter because of it, as a result of it. And that was it. I didn't care. I just went and did what I wanted to do whenever I wanted to do it with whomever I wanted to do it with. And so, my family relationships were only my immediate home family, my mother, my father, my brother, my sister. My brother had already died, but my sisters. And then I had to go out and talk to my ex-wife and talk to my daughter. And though they were at times, they were at fault in my mind, even when I was doing the inventory, I knew they were at fault, you know. I still put that out of my mind and I focused on what I did, you know, because it was important for me to get sober. that I did not want to go back and do what I had, where I didn't want to go back to, from where I had come. You know, drinking 3 half gallons of vodka a week was not something I wanted to go back and doing. Oh, I wanted to mention something to Patrick. He mentioned about going to St. Bride's and saying, people like us end up in here all the time. Well, I never went to prison, but I'm going to the other prison, right?
Indian Creek.
I go to Indian Creek every Saturday. And so one way or another, we end up in prison. So, you know, it's great. And then it says he should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. You know, when I stopped trying to pontificate and become and evangelize what the book says and what the book does and how great I felt about it, because I did, it made me feel great. It gave me energy and I loved it. But I beat people up with it. And it doesn't say to be evangelical and pontificate. In other words, don't talk about it, do it. It says demonstration, you do it. My family, there's some alcoholism in the family, and I cannot go and talk to them about Alcoholics Anonymous. I would never do that. It's none of my business. I won't even tell you who they are. I hear people speak and they say, oh, my daddy's this, and my mama's this, and blah, blah, blah. You're breaking their anonymity if they're alcoholics, aren't you? Right? How are they going to come to a room in a place that you live and get sober if you've been out there talking about them for years? You know? So stop it. I'm sorry. But in any event, what I try to do is I try to act sober. I try to be sober. I demonstrate what it means. I show up when I say I'm going to show up. I do the things I say I'm going to do. And that's the way it works. And it makes my life 10 times better because I don't have to be, you know, trying to tell people what to do all the time. I'm not trying to arrange their life and get them into doing whatever the hell they should be doing. And argument and fact-finding is very important. I have very, very Republican, I'm sorry, I shouldn't know politics, but they're different than I am when it comes to politics, and they want to tell me about it all the time. And I ignore, and we don't talk about it anymore. And they've come to realize they're not going to talk to me about it, and so we don't talk about it. And we've had a wonderful relationship over the last 15 years. It's been great, just because of that one little principle. I avoided it like the plague. And I always try to talk to everybody in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. I can't tell you, you know, if you get up in the morning and do your prayers and try to be where you're supposed to be when you finish with your meditation and prayers, this attitude of helpfulness and friendliness always works. It can carry it with you into your day to anybody at any time. And that's all. Thanks.
Thanks, Donovan.
Yeah, I'm right with you. I was trying to figure out how I was going to talk about this without talking about other outside issues. But only thing I can do is relate my experience. So I got out of prison, and I was running free for 6 months, and then I just drove my life into the ground. Well, I was adopted when I was a small child, and like I was only 3 months old. And my dad, he's been there through it all, thick and thin. And like, if it was me, I would have totally kicked that kid on his ass when he was 18. But he didn't. He's been there. And so, I get sober, and there's a news channel that he likes to watch all day long for probably about 12 hours almost every day, and it's always on and it's always playing, and he's always sitting on the couch. And it's funny, I'll like, and I remember I'm living in his house because I've just wrecked my life. I live above the garage in this little room, and I would come downstairs and he'd be sitting there with my stepmom just watching it, and I'd be like, look at them, they're so disgusting. Like, why don't they go for a jog or something? Go for a walk. And this is how I really feel. Like, I'm like, these people are disgusting. I don't think about all the time they bailed me out and paid for lawyers in the 28 years that they have totally covered for me. I don't think about that. I just think about how disgusting they are and how disgusting their news channel is, and how, and I sort of want the whole house to just burn to the ground. And then I leave and I go to a meeting. And I go in this meeting, And I sit there and I probably share something crazy, or I probably pontificate, was that the word? Hit the big book a couple times. And then after the meeting, I talk to some newcomer, you know? I talk to somebody new. I stay after the meeting and talk. And then I go home and I see my parents and something changed. Something magically changed. Like, I see them and I'm like, I love you guys. And they're still sitting there watching Fox News. Oh, I almost said it. No, they're still sitting there watching that news channel. Have not moved an inch. Maybe they did, but they're in the exact same spot, but something changed with them. And all of a sudden, I'm able to see, like, all the things that they've done for me and how great of people they are. And I don't understand it, because I wanted to burn the house down, but then I go and I do this, and now I feel that love for them. And it only comes, you know, once again, by trying to just practice this program of action, going to a meeting, staying after, putting someone's needs, wants, and desires ahead of my own for a little bit, and then they magically change. That's been a lot. I've had to learn this slowly, but that's been a lot of my experiences. My brother, he gets right upset with them, like crazy upset. And they're on the border of being hoarders. They like to keep a lot of stuff. My brother will go in the house and he'll start trying to throw books away that they have, and they're freaking out, and it's Thanksgiving and we're supposed to all be there to like love each other. And I've watched it and I've learned, only because of this program, because if it wasn't for this, I'd jump right into it with my brother and be me and him versus them. But it's not, and I get to, you know, I can talk to my brother, like, we can't change them. All we can do is love them. And I remember, as he was saying, the amends process, my parents were really cool about it. When I actually sat down and I talked to them about what I was trying to do, they told me to just keep on doing what I was doing. And what was I doing at the time? Reading the big book, taking steps, going to meetings, helping out newcomers. And a lot of my close amends, that's what everyone always told me. And sometimes I wonder if it would have been easier if they were like, just give me $5,000. Because, like, that means I have to keep going to meetings. I have to keep talking to newcomers. I have to keep doing what I was doing at that time. But it's changed the whole dynamic of my family. This last week, my daughter got to come and stay with me. And her family is because her grandmother brought her up here. And, like, I got to hang out with her grandmother, and that lady couldn't stand me. She saw I was the worst of the worst. And, like, I remember, like, we were floating out in the Chesapeake Bay on these tubes, just, like, talking for, like, 3 hours. And, like, that's because of this. There's no other way I can explain it. Because, like, I don't just sit around and have conversations. She was telling me about her religious beliefs and stuff, and I'm just sitting there, listening, open-minded, and, like, not trying to always, like, cut in with, well, I think this, and I think that. Just listen. It was just, like, flowing. It was something magical, and I know that it's through taking these actions and that relationship with God that that's able to happen. Let's see what else we got here. Yeah, that's all I got for right now.
All right. Thank you. We're going to continue on page 100 with both you and the new man. Okay, let me try this. There we go. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. Donald?
You know, one of the things, there's a lot that we're supposed to cover tonight, and I don't think we're going to get to. We got 15 minutes. So I'll try to keep this as brief as I can. And just say this. When it's both me and the new man, it was to really, at this point in my life, it's both me and everybody in this room and everybody that I meet in Alcoholics Anonymous. We all must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. I am not able, I cannot go backwards. I can't stay where I am. I have to keep on making this thing a richer part of my life. And the way I do that is by working the steps yearly. I met a guy once who told me from Denver, he says, you work the steps once a year. He was 36 years sober. He'd been doing it since 1972. And so that's how I get spiritual progress. And then I make sure that I get up in the morning, do the things I'm supposed to be doing, reading and meditating and praying. And the final thing is, it says here, we realize that things which came to us, not things which I went and got, not things which I wanted, things that I worked for, all those things are important sometimes. You got to work for certain things. But the things that really are God-given gifts are things that come to me. And I had to learn that I had to step back and let life come to me rather than me try to go out and grab life. Because when I'm trying to grab life, all I'm doing is I'm running the Donald Smith agenda. And the Donald, I shouldn't say, this is going to be on the internet, so I shouldn't be saying my last name. The Donald S. agenda is what Donald S. wants, not what God wants. And I always try to remember that I need to step back in my life. Just take a step back. The book says to do that in the 11th step. It says, when we pause and agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. Well, I pause on all occasions if I feel like I'm getting ready to go off half-cocked to do something. And if I let God bring something to me rather than me go get it, somehow it's 10 times better. It is much better than anything else that I could ever have wanted or expected to get or really deserve, for that matter. And it says, no matter what, you will live in a new and wonderful world no matter what your present circumstances. And for me, that new and wonderful world is not a nice car, a good job, although all those things are important to have. You know, you got to have that kind of stuff. It's peace of mind. It's being able to have happiness, to come to somebody in happiness and friendliness, helpfulness and friendliness, to be able to let people, you know, do what they're going to do and say what they're going to say and not have to say it, then have to correct them. You ever had that? You ever, like, want to correct everything everybody says to you? No, I would say it more like this, you know. I don't have to do any of that anymore. It's not that important anymore. And it's a peace of mind rather than a material thing. That's it. Thanks.
Thanks, Donald. Both you and the new man must walk day by day. Totally. I when I don't have sponsees and I'm just running on self, I don't know. Life doesn't seem so, like, it's not so great. It doesn't. There's been times in this program when I've just been pretty bummed out. And then, you know, you find someone and you start reading with them, and it does. It takes on a whole new meaning. And I like how, you know, we walk together. Like, I don't walk ahead of him. And that's the one thing that I love in the book. It's going to say, you know, shoulder to shoulder. And for me, like, I go through the steps a lot, I feel, because every time I take someone through the steps, I go right with them. And they remind me of things that I might have not been thinking of when I did my fourth step. And then they remind me of amends through them doing it. And we have open discussion about things. But I like how it says, you know, follow the dictates of a higher power. I don't always know what the dictates of a higher power is. I know what it's not, though, thanks to you guys. Thanks to this program and these steps. Like, I know what it's, the way he's not dictating to me. But sometimes I don't, you know. Another thing that I, just like everything I've said, that when I put myself into God's hands, things were better. And a big thing for me that I notice is, like, praying. Praying's great, but I don't always get the results that I want. Like, I go and pray. I always say it to, like, my sponsees. I'm like, the next time you're hungry, why don't you just go in the closet and pray for a ham sandwich and see how quick you get one. And, like, you know, I pray every morning. I pray on my way to work. I'll do the third step prayer, and then I'll go in. I'll still screw up work. But the one thing that does help that I don't do as much as I should is honestly meditation. That's really when I can put myself in God's hands. Like I can see everything. Everything just like clears up when I get away from all these thoughts in my head. I have to talk about meditation because for me it does marvelous things in my life. It really changes like the person that I am. I notice like when I meditate that I'm able to like go and get things accomplished without getting like blocked, because like I'll have a whole agenda of things to do and I'll get like through like four of them and then I'll be all in left field. But like when I use meditation, like it keeps me focused and on track. And I really, I don't know, I believe that's what keeps me closer to God, along with praying. But I am big on meditation. That's all I got.
All right. Thank you. So we're going to continue on 100. Assuming we are spiritually fit, we could do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which shows drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go into their homes. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice cap, and even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the problem of alcohol. And we probably can sneak in a couple minutes each. Donald?
Oh, okay. A couple of real quick things. I love this line about assuming we're spiritually fit. I think that tells me that if I can't go do something, there's a problem. You know, that's the little warning flag that goes up in my life. If I'm having to throw myself out of my house to go to work in every day, there's a problem. And I have to pay attention to those things. And that's an important part of doing prayer, doing meditation, talking with a sponsor, just coming to realize that there are things that go on in my life. And just say this, it says, these conditions are met every day. Not just going to bars and eating. I mean, I used to go eat at bars all the time. When I was, you know, I had about 10 years sober, I started going to bars to eat. Why? Because there's food there. There's people there. I'm a people person. I never wanted to drink. I never thought about drinking, but I would go have lunch. No big deal. I don't go there at night because that's what they're all doing. Because when I would go there at night, I'd say I go to get something to eat, but I always end up drinking the whole night. So, you know, food was never there, but lunch was always a good thing. But the point I wanted to get to, and I'll try to say this as fast as I can, on the very back of this form that we got, it says bottles are only symbols. We have to stop fighting anything and anyone. And so when it says we meet these conditions every day, we meet the conditions of life every day. I have to meet the life's conditions on a daily basis. And if I cannot meet them on a daily basis, there's something wrong with my spiritual status. There's some problem that I have that is causing me to revert back to my alcoholic mind. That thing never goes away. I have recovered from alcoholism, but I'm still an alcoholic. You know, I am a nutbag at times. And sometimes I'm just uncomfortable. You know, I'm just plain uncomfortable. And I don't understand why that is. Things are going great, but I'm uncomfortable. So that means that there's something wrong with my spiritual status, and I have to look at what these things are. And there's a whole series of steps I have to do that. That's awesome.
Thank you.
I was going to pontificate, but I won't do it.
I can definitely talk about this one. I don't know, like Don said, it's not just bars. You know, I sit and I've listened to people say, you know, when I go to the doctor, I make sure that he knows that I'm an alcoholic. And I always, like, I've heard this in meetings. And, like, I've been in meetings where the whole thing turns to prescription drugs. And I'm like, what the heck? And for me, like, the problem was removed. You guys give me things, and yeah, I fall off the beam sometimes, but for the most part, the problem has been removed. I broke my foot, like 2 years ago, and I went to the doctor, and I didn't freak out on the doctor and tell him I was an alcoholic. He gave me hydrocodones, and I went and I filled the prescription because I have a broken foot, and I never ended up taking anything because sanity had returned in my life through taking these actions, taking these steps. I didn't feel like, oh man, them hydrocodones are calling to me. And yeah, I'm sure if I ate the whole bottle, I'd be feeling wonderful. But it's not like that. Sanity had returned, you know? And that was the biggest thing, is that my first sponsor used to stress that, like, I can do anything. When I first got sober, I tell them that I was gonna go DD for all my friends that I still had. And, like, that's a funny thing, too, I hear in the meetings. Like, I never had any real friends until I came to AA. Well, that's not true. I did. These people would look out for me when I was drinking and would give me rides home. And they would take my keys so I didn't go and kill a family of four. So they were sort of friends. And when I first got sober, like, I'd go and I'd hang out with them. And my sponsor never told me, like, you need to stay away from those people. He used to, I remember I was heading to Atlantis in Oceania. And I remember I called him up, and he's like, you're crazy. And I'm like, yeah, I'm just ED. And he's like, all right, I'm gonna leave my cell phone on my nightstand. If you need anything, give me a call. Man, I'm so thankful for that. I'm so thankful that he let me have those experiences. Because what happened, I remember I was at a bar on Military Highway. It was like 1 in the morning. And it finally came to me that this isn't my life anymore. Everyone was starting, you know, the witching hour hit. There's a girl crying in the corner, two people yelling on the side. And I was like, this just isn't me. But I got to figure that out for myself without someone dictating what I did and what I didn't. I got a line out of 12 and 12. Defiance is our outstanding characteristic. Yes, I'm very defiant. If you tell me that I can't go to bars, I'm going to go to bars. But he let me go and figure that stuff out. As long as that I just was doing this with him. And that's the biggest thing. I hear it all the time. Like, if we have this book, we take these steps, some simple steps. We look at our past. We straighten things out. We have a lot of consistency and follow through. And our life changes. And I can go anywhere. Another quick one. I had a friend, my friends in Maine, I grew up with since I was a little kid. They kept saying, come up to Maine. And I was like, nah, because I knew what they were going to do. They were going to smoke weed and drink the whole time I went up there. I knew it. And so I was like, nah, I'm good. And then my friend called me and said his dad was dying. And I was like, all right. And I went up there. And they drank and smoked weed the whole time I was up there, right in front of me. But I was safe and protected. I got to take pictures with his dad and hang out with him and see him before he died. And he died like a couple of weeks later. That's what you guys gave me sanity where I can now start to think on my own. God gave me a brain to use, it says. Like, I know if I just go up there to hang out with my friends and they're smoking weed and I go and spend a week with them just following them around, probably isn't too smart. But when I have a reason, then it's good. And then you even tell me, throw myself into being helpful. You taught me that, because, like, I'll get around people, and the only thing I would have to make social things comfortable was alcohol. That was the lubricant to make me feel okay. And I still will go to, like, gatherings when everyone's drinking, and I feel really awkward. But you guys told me what to do. Go see what you can do to help them out. Empty the trash. CEO, you want a beer, man? Help them out. And, like, I'm so thankful for that. Thanks.
Thank you, man. So we're going to pass the Seven Tradition basket. And we have the Seven Tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each of the group's rent and other expenses, the Seven Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free from outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, which is to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Excuse me. The amount of our contributions is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And I'm going to open up the floor for any AA concerned announcements. Anybody?
I'm Jack, an alcoholic.
Yes, Jack.
We're a Ninth Street Living sober meeting August 14th, Thursday, and having a great speaker, a cake for no reason. We're going to raffle off a big, big book, and there'll be parking won't be an issue because school's out. So.
Awesome. Thank you. Anybody else? All right. So our home group, Simple Actions, is having our big supper and speaker coming up this next Monday. So we'll not be going over any steps. We have a potluck happening at 6 p.m. All are invited. Families are welcome. And then the speaker begins at 7. And we have Will B. from Richmond, who I hear is absolutely wonderful. So we're very excited about that. And we invite you to bring yourself and bring anybody you want. Any other announcements before I close up? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members. All right. And then, you know, something very important to all of us. Any newcomers, anybody in their first 30 days of sobriety, we'd like to just welcome you with your first name. Yeah, back there.
Hey,
Derek, welcome.
Hey, Derek, welcome.
Roger, welcome.
Awesome, man. Thank you. You're the reason we're here. So here we have a literature table to our right. See any home group member after the meeting if you want literature. If it folds, it's free. And here we do the sponsorship question, which is sponsorship is yours for the asking. We urge you not to delay. If you have any questions or like additional information about sponsorship in AA, we have two home group members up here at the table. We have Catherine and Jason up here at the table. If you have any questions, please come up here and ask about sponsorship. And if you don't have a sponsor, don't leave here without a sponsor. Closing, we ask the group to, let's thank the panel for sharing tonight. That was awesome, fellas. Donald and Patrick, good job, mate. We appreciate it, guys. And after the cleanup, we all are invited to the meeting after the meeting where we can continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at Plaza del Sol, the most wonderful little Mexican place you've ever visited. So you're going to miss out if you don't come out. Fellowship really saved my life, you know, so stuff like that helps. Please come out. And we have can we have a volunteer to read page 164? Out of the big book?
Casey.
Casey.
Our book is not
And here we close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.